morning, ladies and gentlemen. Can I just acknowledge Onslow Medical Centre, Tracy Wynn, the practice manager, Dr. Tim Jeffries and Alison Craig, and thank you for the look around your lovely new practice. Also here with Minister Paula Bennett, Jonathan Coleman and Brett Hudson, our candidate for Ahuriu, and current List MP. This morning I've just been out in the Hutt Valley visiting a school and a business, and the business in particular was the another face of a successful economy that's going somewhere. They generate exports, pay tax, and as a result of that strong economy, we've got a government with surpluses, and that gives us positive choices. The choices to improve our public services, both by improving access to public services and also by targeting better the resource that we apply so that we can get the results for people that are going to, in the case of the most vulnerable, change their lives. With respect to health, we've continued to grow the spend on health, and it's now reached $16.8 billion this year. And to give you a sense of scale, that is up there with the dairy industry as a proportion of the economy. But of course, more importantly, it's about providing world-class health services to almost 5 million New Zealanders. We've moved to improve access in recent years with the expanded free GP and prescriptions for all children under 13. However, we want to make it easier for more low-income New Zealanders to visit their GP before a condition becomes severe. This is pretty topical as the health system finds its way through what has been a fairly long winter peak, with some real pressure on our GPs and also in our hospital system. And we want to acknowledge the work of so many of the frontline health professionals in dealing with those pressures. So we want to reduce the numbers turning up to busy emergency departments, and also encourage people to take early action to get ahead of worsening conditions. So I'm able to announce today that National will roll out an $18 cap for visiting a GP to all community service card holders from 1 July next year. So for everyone who holds a community services card, there will be a cap of $18 on the cost of visiting a GP. At the same time, we'll expand the range of coverage of the community services card to include anyone who's receiving income-related rent and the accommodation supplement. What does this all add up to? It means that around 600,000 low-income New Zealanders will now receive access to cheaper GP visits, that is to a visit with a cap of $18 on the fee. For example, a family of four earning up to $68,000 a year will be able to access $18 GP visits if they are not already in a low-cost practice. That is, of course, in addition to the free visits for the under-13s in that family that already apply. As a result of this extension of low-cost GP visits to a further 600,000 people, it means that around 2.5 million New Zealanders will have access to either free or cheap doctor's visits. This step comes on top of our family incomes package announced in the budget that comes into place on the 1st of April next year. That's a package that provides additional support for families on low incomes, families with more children, and families with high housing costs. Because of the extension of the accommodation supplement, around 136,000 families will have their income increased by an average of $36 a week. Many of those families are not in low-cost practices, and so the extension of the community services card to them and the availability of the $18 visit wherever they go on the basis of their card is going to have a significant impact on reducing the costs of their visit to a GP. We value the work of our general practitioners. This policy is to some extent the result of extensive discussion between the GPs and the Minister of Health. And so I'll now hand over to the Minister of Health to fill in the details.
Well, thanks very much, Prime Minister. Look, it is great to be here at Onslow Medical Centre. I opened this building back in 2015 and certainly appreciate that we're being hosted here today. It's also great, of course, to have the Prime Minister here for what is an extremely significant announcement, and also the Deputy Prime Minister, as well as our colleague Brett Hudson. So, look, as the Prime Minister has said, this is a significant announcement. It is going to roll out $18 capped GP consultations to 600,000 low-income New Zealanders by extending those consultations to community service card holders, and at the same time expanding the eligibility for the CSC to those on accommodation supplement or income-related rent. We've talked extensively with general practitioners across New Zealand over a long period of time as to how we can have a more targeted system, and this is delivering on that. So I think you're going to find this will be, you know, really well received, not only by the medical profession, but also by those thousands of New Zealanders who are going to benefit from these cheap doctors' fees or doctors' consultations. As the PM's also said, you've now got 2.5 million New Zealanders receiving either free or very cheap general practice consultations. And if you look at the social investment approach, this aligns completely with that. So it's around intervening earlier, making sure that people have access to the medical care they need before a condition might deteriorate. Obviously, that's better for those families, for children, but it also keeps people out of hospital beds and away from emergency departments. So a really significant announcement. It is a step along the way towards a much more targeted system, and really happy that we are here today to announce this. So thanks very much. We're very happy to take any questions that you might have.
GPs have been calling and campaigning for changes to that low-cost access system.
Well, this is a very significant step along the way. So if you look at very low cost access consultations, I mean, that already covers 1.4 million New Zealanders. Obviously, we looked at a range of options, but now with this, you know, we're extending that coverage, you know, very considerably. Of course, we want to have a targeted system. These 600,000 people, you know, by definition, that is the development of a targeted system, but we're not touching those very low-cost access practices. So the key thing is, of those 1.4 million New Zealanders already receiving heavily subsidised consultations, they are not going to lose any of that benefit.
Does this help solve some of those inequities in the system, though?
Well, it means that if you look at those very low-cost access practices, there were 600,000 people outside those practices on low incomes who were not getting low-cost consultations, and now they are. So that really does solve that inequity. Absolutely,
and
it does.
And in terms of changing the alternative, the community services card, can you give some more details about who will be able to access them now, who don't?
Yep, so it's people on income-related rents and receiving accommodation supplements. So we had the community services card in place. It's been a long-standing device, which has to some extent been underutilised. You know, there's a long history behind it, but it gives us an immediate system we can roll out to target these subsidies where they are needed, and that's these 600,000 low-income New Zealanders. So it's a very clean and efficient way of delivering the care where it's needed in very short time frame. Yeah, this is going to be rolled out by the 1st of July next year, so it's going to be good around. It's $380 million over 4 years. And so the important point about that is this increases the funding in primary care by 10%. So we're now going to be spending over $1 billion a year on primary care. So that's medical care in the community.
Will you look at further addressing the criticisms of the VLCA, that it is not targeted to the right areas?
Well, this really does make considerable progress around that. So VLCA currently covers 1.4 million New Zealanders. None of those people are going to lose any of their access or benefits, and this is an add-on to that. So if you look at it comprehensively, between this and free under 13s, which costs $40 to $50 million dollars per year, you've now got over half the New Zealand population either getting free or very cheap GP consultations. And that is going to make a significant difference in terms of literally the health of the population over the years to come. So, you know, this is the most significant announcement in primary health care for many, many years.
Why is this policy needed now? Has it been getting more difficult for people to access primary care like GP visits?
Well, we've wanted to have a more targeted system. Some people have told us that affordability is an issue, but at the same time, that's been a bit of a mixed picture. So if you look at the New Zealand Health Survey, the percentage of people talking about the cost of prescriptions as being a factor has actually dropped over time. But there are other people saying that in any given year, you know, they've got to take into consideration the cost of going to a doctor. And for 600,000 extra people, that consideration has now dropped way, way down because, you know, they could be spending anything from $40 to $60 for a GP consultation now, if they're not going to a subsidised practice. That now drops way down to $18, so really significant.
The government's also had to lift accommodation supplement payments. You've had to cut GP visit costs. So is this an admission that some basic costs have sort of got out of whack?
Well, I think what it goes back to is what the Prime Minister said. You know, 9 years of really prudent fiscal management, knowing how to manage the economy, and actually that was down to Bill's time as finance minister. We are now in the position to do many of these things which we've wanted to over a long, long period. So we've got some real options, and those dividends of growth, you know, are going back first of all to the most needy New Zealanders in the case of health, which is 600,000 extra low-income New Zealanders getting these very cheap consultations.
So everyone who gets an some kind of accommodation help from the government.
If you're on IRR or AS, yes.
So if the economy keeps getting better, the surpluses keep getting bigger, can you see these costs falling further? Can we see $0 GP?
Well, look, this is a significant announcement today. I'd just enjoy this one. Yeah.
Are there enough GPs to accommodate what is likely to be an increase in people going to doctors?
Well, look, I don't know that there'll be an increase in people going to doctors overall. We do need to get... we're training enough doctors out of medical schools. We've doubled the numbers of GP trainees. The main issue on the GP workforce is actually where they're distributed in New Zealand. So we need more GPs in our rural areas, but we've got strategies in place to address that. They're quite detailed, but basically Health Workforce New Zealand is working with the universities to get more young doctors exposed to rural medicine early on.
But 500,000 people didn't go to the doctor last year because of the cost. If you're saying that you won't see more people going, surely those are the people you want to be going to.
No, well, it's not quite that. Like, what they said was it was a factor in their decision making. And so we want to remove that worry for people. Look, if you've got an older person who's concerned about a cough, feeling unwell, you know, a lot of these patients have very complex medical conditions. You want them to feel they can go to their doctor, that they can afford it, rather than thinking, oh, wait a week or two, and then actually they end up in hospital much more unwell, and, you know, obviously that has a financial cost in the system as well.
Do you have a value on what you could save by having them first at the GP?
Well, we need to do much more modelling around that over the long term, and don't forget this is a party announcement today. So should we have the privilege of being re-elected, we'll then be able to get the officials to, you know, model that sort of work. But there's no question.
It could save lives.
Oh, it will definitely save lives. There's no question about that. It will save lives. People will be weller because they will not be taking costs into consideration to anywhere near the same extent as they would have previously. So I think you'll find 600,000 people greatly encouraged by this announcement today. I wouldn't stretch it that far, but what you can say is, look, it's very clearly accepted that early access to general practice services keeps people weller and stops illnesses from progressing to a more serious stage.
And are you saying that we won't need to employ more GPs because we've got enough to
Well,
work with, you know, people having cheaper
Yeah, we won't need to employ more GPs specifically for this initiative, but as the population grows, there's no question we do need more GPs. But under the term of this government, we have doubled the number of trainees funded each year in general practice from about 90 to around 190, around that.
What about people trying to physically access a GP, particularly in small and impoverished areas?
Yep, so it's more of a problem actually in rural areas. So as I said, we're working with medical schools around what we can do around that. So they, both Auckland and Otago, are sending final year students out into rural areas to do part of their training. There's schemes around that. Also now for your registration year, your year after graduating from medical school, you can do that in the community. And there will actually be a community required component. So, you know, the strategy is really around exposing students and young doctors early on to, you know, the rural environment. Because, you know, a lot of our graduates from the city have never had exposure to rural medicine. So there's a whole lot of things we've got to do. Voluntary bonding has also been really successful. You know, scores of doctors have been through that. So there's a full court press strategy on making sure we can get the doctors that we need in rural areas.
Are there any practices where it's cheaper than $18?
Well, you know, practices do have discretion, so I'm sure you'll be able to find that, but the point is this is an $18 cap.
And, you know, when you unveiled the GP free GPs funded routines, there was sort of GP practice buy-in.
Absolutely, it was incredible.
You know, if you've got a community services card, it will be
$18. Yeah. So, look, that was incredibly successful. So 99% of general practices took up the free under-13s. We will be working with general practice around the subsidy rates to ensure that the take-up is at least 85% of practices, but we want to get it well up beyond that.
So you do have to have their buy-in for this to happen?
Oh, look, it is going to be a generously structured subsidy, so it will be to their advantage to do this, absolutely.
What happens to those who don't?
Well, general practices in the end are private businesses, and, you know, effectively they do compete for patients. What I can tell you, you know, the existing very low-cost access scheme, the complaint from GPs has been that they're not in it. So, you know, people want these subsidies, not only the patients but also the practices. But I think you're going to find that, you know, once we've worked through all the detail and GPs see the subsidies they're getting, people will want to be in this because this is actually what they've been asking for. And Peter Moody's primary healthcare funding report, which came out over a year ago, this was actually the solution that they were looking for, using the community services card as a proxy for low income.
So can I just get you to explain again why you don't think it'll lead to more people seeing doctors? If people are saying the cost was a reason for them not going,
yeah,
and you say this, yeah, will get rid of that barrier.
It was a factor in them considering whether they could go to a doctor overall. It's not going to grow practice populations. You know, it's, by definition, there'll still be the same number of patients rolling up to any given practice. But what we've seen in the past, like with the free under-13s, there was initial small spike, but then it evened out over time. And, you know, I'm absolutely confident general practices will be able to cope with this. The other thing is general practices have wanted this. That's all the feedback we've had.
So they factored it in, they thought about it, but they still went anyway.
Sorry?
They factored it in.
It's hard to know what that meant for every single patient, obviously, because you're dealing with thousands. But the feedback in the health survey was it was a consideration. So someone might say, oh, look, I haven't got this enough money this week to go to the GP. I'll just see if I get worse or better, or I might wait till, you know, I receive a payment in 2 weeks' time. Whereas what we want is for these 600,000 people to say, hey, I feel like I need to see a doctor. I'm going to go today. Anyway, I know the PM has other engagements to get to. Thanks very much for your attendance today. Cheers.
We were going to do other questions.
So okay. Labor's promising a bail into the community.
What do you think of that? Well, we've announced, as we announced yesterday, we are going to be continuing with the roads of national significance because the vast majority of people travel by car. It's tried and the roads road building program's tried and tested, and we can extend it out over the next 10 years so that there is a high functioning roading network. We just don't see the case for what would be a very expensive alternative to the big investment we're making now.
So you think road is more important than rail?
Well, in that part of the country, yes. We've been investing heavily in rail in metropolitan Auckland and coming south from Auckland because you can extend the commuter rail network where there's strong demand. this looks like another one of these policies, a bit like the climate change one, where Labor are, you know, floating the idea but leaving all the questions unanswered.
Isn't it a more progressive approach environmentally to put people on trains?
Well, what goes on roads are electric vehicles, and by far the biggest change in transport that's coming is electric vehicles. And we've, you know, the government's doing its bit, going to have a quarter of the fleet electric vehicles by 2021, and we expect the uptake in New Zealand is going to be quite rapid across the community. So the benefit of the roads is it caters for the alternative technology that's going to make the biggest difference. Look, rail has its merits, but extending rail through provincial New Zealand looks expensive but unnecessary. You know, we have to get the roads built because that's what the freight uses, that's what the overwhelming majority of the public use.
You said yesterday, though, about population growing in these regions. Don't you think people who live in Hamilton and Tauranga like the idea of possibly even being able to commute to Auckland and live in those areas?
Oh, I'm sure they do.
And that's by rail, though? I mean, being able to get on a train and be in Auckland in an hour.
Well, as I said, there's always the opportunity of extending the commuter rail network south of Auckland. Alongside that, we're going to have four lanes from Auckland right through to the foot of the Kaimais over the next 6 or 7 years, or a bit longer, maybe up to 10 years. A big part of that's in place now. Significant stretches of it will be completed by 2020. So, yeah, we're quite clear. We want to get the four-lane roading network in place. That's going to cater for the economic growth of freight and the growth of population. And the rail network, we're investing heavily in metropolitan Auckland. There's the possibility of extending it south, but we don't see the case for taking a rail, commuter rail, through to Tauranga.
Is it just not possible to have road and rail, to improve the roads and improve the rail system? Is it just too expensive to do both?
Well, it's pretty expensive to do both. And for us, the priority is getting those four-lane highway network completed. And the response to the big projects has been fantastic. You know, where you get them, we're executing them well up to now. The roads are national significance. We've got 10 more to do. I think there's a high level of confidence and credibility about those projects.
Just on the new revelations today around New Zealand's involvement in Afghanistan, Defence Force might not have been public police around who fired the first shots at the CAC and so on. I mean, are you confident that Defence has been as open as it can be?
Well, the Minister has said that he's asked Defence for briefing on whether there's any new issues that have arisen, because Defence have their own review processes. Look, we've had a presence in Afghanistan since the early 2000s, lost 10 lives there. I attended one of the funerals, so those are poignant reminders of the sacrifice but the risk that you take in these places. So our defence forces, we believe, are very professional. They've been in difficult, highly risky and quite unpredictable circumstances in Afghanistan. So we support them in their role at the front line. Now, as the Minister has said, if there's new issues arise out of these investigations, then, of course, we would look at them.
Have you read the
No, I haven't.
Will you
send it? Well, I'll have a look at the broad brush of the material. It'll be primarily the Minister of Defence's job to do with the Defence Forces.
Well, Minister, the Institute of Chartered Accountants this morning has released a report on inequality and declining home affordability in New Zealand. It seems a bit odd that we've got criticisms now coming out of this sort of bunch of society. Is that something you've seen or looking at in terms of rising inequality? They're saying our prosperity is at risk of rising inequality.
Well, they may be a bit out of time. I haven't seen the report. But I think you're seeing now the housing market flattening, some places falling, which is going to have a positive impact on housing affordability as incomes grow. And in a growing economy, it'll make housing more affordable because you want everyone to be able to afford the opportunity for housing. And with respect to inequality, the report almost certainly won't take account of the series of changes we've made, which is a $25 a week for people on benefit a couple of years ago, the family incomes packaged, announced in the budget. This announcement today will have a significant impact, particularly on people who've got high housing costs, because they'll now get the community services card, and quite a few of them didn't get it before, a couple of hundred thousand. And when they go to the doctor, it'll cost them $20 or $30 a week less. And over a year, that's going to add up. And they'll get higher accommodation supplement if we're elected on 1 April next year.
And there's talk about using maybe some of the money in preview if that does show $1.5-2 billion extra, some of that in further tax cuts or tax changes. Can you comment on that?
That would be getting ahead of ourselves. The preview will come out when it comes out shortly with the... I mean, that's the Treasury's opening of the books, and you just have to wait and see what the numbers are. I think it would be getting ahead of ourselves to anticipate them.
What do you make of Gareth Morgan's comments about Jacinda Ardern needing to prove that she's not just a kid wearing lipstick?
I think they are deliberately appalling comments.
Deliberately?
I think deliberately appalling, yeah.
Could you work with Gareth?
Well, not that. Look, if you've got an attitude like that, I don't think any politician, anyone in public life would want to work with them. You know, that's outside the acceptable boundaries of political criticism and language. But I think he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
I think he's designed the comments to stir up attention because he hasn't had much lately.
I'm sure he's thrilled you're all asking questions about him, yeah? And he's got exactly the sort of thing he was expecting for it. Yeah,
Minister, just you've spoken about this a lot in the past, about the sort of attacks that women get and comments made about female politicians. What do you think about...
Obviously, we wouldn't make anything even close to it. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's gasping for relevance, and so he's gone for a cheap shot that he knew would get the kind of reaction that he's getting. So I think I'll stick with our policy announcements that are far more meaningful for New Zealanders.
Mm. All right. OK, thanks very much.
Last one. The Labour Party made a proposal yesterday about curbing overseas buyers buying New Zealand houses.
Look, they've reheated this announcement, you know, for the last couple of elections. Overseas buyers have been a small influence on the housing market. All the work that's gone in to KiwiSaver Home Start, to get working with councils, funding infrastructure, all that is now working. So there's 200,000 houses being built over the next 6 years, and with rising incomes, that gives people a chance, much greater chance of affordability. Whoever's buying and selling houses is probably going to find they're taking significantly more risk in a market that's now flattened out.
Just quickly, Prime Minister, are you concerned that we're going to see another spike in house prices if you guys get into government like we did last election?
Look, the market will do what the market does. I think the indications are there's the flattening out of house prices is more than just a pre-election.
Last election, though, with Labour campaigning, they've said that they potentially would do a capital gains tax, which is what they were saying last election. So it's a similar sort of scenario.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt there'll be concern about the capital gains tax proposals. I think Labour are trying not to say it, but for those couples who bought another house as their retirement savings vehicle, they'll be pretty keen to hear the answers to the questions about just what the Labour Party mean on capital gains tax.
The last place you went to open a hut, what's the government doing to help businesses like that smoke alarm manufacturer exporting things to Australia?
Well, as he pointed out there, he gets support from Callaghan Innovation, where they put in R&D money, the government puts in some. And the great news is they're coming up with new products that are selling well against the Australian population. I think it was a very great example of real Kiwi ingenuity on a small scale, but quite successful because they're just so smart. And the government helps those businesses out, and they're growing.
Thanks. Out that he would like to see more investment in R&D. Is that an area that National is looking into at all?
Well, we've kept putting more in each year, and we put more in the budget, and because we've got surpluses, then we've always got those choices. We have, there's been a big lift in the amount of R&D, and also in the way that it's done, so that it's more directly tied to what the businesses regard as ideas that are going to be successful.
Awesome.
Okay.
Thanks,
thank you.